It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
Are Jews for Jesus soul Nazis? That's right, soul Nazis. Are they worse than Hitler? I've been in Israel and had protests, meetings we were involved with by counter-missionaries, some of whom held up signs that said, Hitler wanted our bodies, you want our souls. A lot to talk about today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Or online, just go to askdrbrown.org and click on Contact Us. Okay, I am in right outside of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, coming your way live a few hours before a debate with a conservative rabbi, Rabbi Michael Gold. He's written a lot on family issues and things like that, but was very glad to have a public dialogue with me about Jesus, Messiah or not. So that's going to be taking place tonight. There's not going to be a live stream of the event, so you won't be able to watch on video, but God willing, we'll be back in the studio tomorrow in Charlotte, and we'll give you an update on the event and maybe even play some audio highlights for you. What I want to do is explore a few issues with you. One is why there is this kind of rhetoric, why Jews for Jesus and fellow Jews like me who believe in Jesus, who are not part of that organization, but who are believers in Jesus, Yeshua's Messiah, why there's such hostility towards us in much of the Jewish community. I want to explore that with you. Also want to put out a question for you. Is it right for a Jew who believes in Jesus to continue to say that he or she is a Jew? If you are born again in the family of God, should you just say you're a Christian? Should you just say you're part of the church? Or is there no more Jew or Gentile, and we're just part of this one new body, and the ethnic identity is gone? Or is it absolutely right to say, of course I'm a Jew, and following Jesus doesn't make me less Jewish, makes me more Jewish? 866-34-TRUTH. Before I get into the soul Nazi rhetoric and even tell you about a Facebook page that makes that accusation, just wanted to give you a couple of reports that mentioned the Isaiah 53 debate that took place a couple weeks back in New York City, the open mic debate I had at the invitation of Chosen People Ministries. There are a couple of very interesting things that are going on right now in Jewish ministry. And if you say, well, you know, I'm not Jewish, I don't run into a lot of Jews, and Jewish ministry doesn't really interest me, I would suggest to you that it really should, for quite a number of reasons. One reason is Jesus himself was Jewish, and these are his own people, his blood relatives. Another reason is that through the centuries, the professing church has often driven Jews away from Jesus rather than to him, and therefore there's a need to repair the breach and to present the real Messiah to the Jewish people. But not only that, there are promises that remain for the Jewish people, and not only for the Jewish people, but as God touches the Jewish people, through them being touched, salvation will spread around the entire world. And in fact, ultimately, Israel's salvation, according to Paul in Romans 11, quite explicitly will mean life from the dead. So this is something of great importance in Romans 1:16. I believe the best case you can make is that the gospel is for the Jew first and also for the Gentile, not was, but is. So this should be important to you, not for sentimental reasons, but for biblical reasons. But there are a couple of major things that are happening that caught the attention of Michael Orbach, writing in an Orthodox Jewish newspaper, two campaigns this summer. And one of the campaigns is the book compilation by my friend Sid Roth, 10 Amazing Jews They Thought for Themselves. And there are 10 stories, including a Holocaust survivor, a convict, Sid Roth, and yours truly, Michael Brown. We've got chapters in this book. It was distributed widely in the former Soviet Union, all over Russia. I think well over 800,000 copies distributed there with these testimonies. I remember years back when I lived in Maryland, Sid had a dream. It was the first prophetic dream he had. He came to me and said, Mike, I had a dream of you and nine other Jewish believers in Jesus writing stories about your life. And in my case, I explained why I was not a traditional Jew, why I didn't follow rabbinic traditions and instead followed Yeshua. Others were testimonies from all different backgrounds. And the books had good circulation in America, but phenomenal circulation overseas, especially, as I say, in former Soviet Union. And Sid had a vision to give away 1 million of these books in the States and to send them to Jewish homes to get funding to do it. I think he sent out well over 100,000. Maybe the number's double that by now. So there's a report on that, obviously, a critical report. And then there's another report on the Isaiah 53 campaign headed up by Chosen People Ministries and my friend Mitch Glazer, who sponsored the Isaiah 53 debate and has sponsored a number of debates I've done with my friend Rabbi Shmuley. By the way, if you live in the greater North Carolina area, I strongly encourage you to come to the Apologetics Conference this year in October, sponsored by Southern Evangelical Seminary, at the end of which there should be a live debate with Rabbi Shmuley and me. That's right in Charlotte. Okay, so Mitch Glazer is headed up this Isaiah 53 campaign and saying Isaiah 53 needs a new look by the traditional Jewish community, needs to be taken seriously. And of course, it gets a lot of opposition. Rabbi Tobias Singer, well-known counter-missionary from Outreach Judaism, we debated about 18 years ago, and he's declined having a debate since then, although my door remains open for a good, serious debate between the two of us. He says Isaiah 53 is the fourth servant song, which began in Isaiah 41. The first three servant songs, it identifies the servant who suffers at the hands of the nations as Israel. Isaiah introduces the servant of God, both in the singular and plural, who endured tremendous pains, but who was ultimately vindicated in the Messianic days. And then he makes this claim, this amazing claim, the chapter is molested, ripped out of context, and mistranslated and presented to Jewish people who know nothing about the faith they're being asked to abandon. Of course, there are wonderfully solid answers to rhetoric like that. But there's a report about the Isaiah 53 meeting in another article. This is called Aggressive Missionaries in New York. And this article refers to the debate as poorly attended. This is an extraordinarily biased article, by the way. They don't even say Jesus by name. They just refer to him as JC, which is a typical derogatory thing that religious Jews will do. So this report from July 22nd calls it a poorly attended public debate. By the way, and I'm identified as a top missionary lecturer. They might have identified me as others have, public enemy number one, but I take that as a badge of honor. And actually, the organizers thought, let's get a place that seats between 1 and 200, because that's what they're anticipating. I said, you know, maybe more will come, so they put out more chairs in the room to seat 300, and it was closer to the 200 number, so they were, it was as expected in terms of attendance. We've had other places with a 1,200-seat auditorium packed to capacity. So it all depends what the setting is and who's partaking in it. So attendance was fine. But, of course, poorly attended public debate featuring top missionary lecturer Dr. Michael Brown, author of a 5-part book series which purports to answer Jewish objections to JC. And then it says, among the few Jews who attended were several counter-missionary experts, including Rabbi Moshe Shulman, their executive director of Judaism's Answer. And Shulman engaged Brown in collegial exchange and scored several points refuting Brown's scholarly allegations that Isaiah 53 definitively supports the messiahship of JC. Hey, I am in regular dialogue with Rabbi Moshe Shulman, but I will leave it to those who watch the video or listen to the audio when it's available to decide who scored the points. But I think from the reaction of the audience there, it was quite clear. But here's the perception, and I'm reading again from this article, Aggressive Missionaries in New York. While evangelical Christians invest millions of dollars a year to influence and convert Jews in metro New York, Jewish communal resources to counter the spiritual assault are paltry, with much of the load falling on Rabbi Craig Miller and his underfunded staff at the Jewish Community Relations Council, a handful of concerned volunteers. I had some very cordial interaction with Rabbi Craig Miller afterwards. He was nothing but civil and friendly. But the sense is that we, the missionaries, have this massive army of people with massive funding, and the Jewish community has very little in the way of resources to fight. Now, here's why we have a massive army. Because if you're a believer, if you're a follower of Jesus, then you're a part part of the army that reaches out to all people, including Jews. And you may work with a Jewish person, you may have a friend, you may have a family member through intermarriage that's Jewish, and you get to share your faith. And the great majority of Jews who come to faith in Jesus around America do so through the witness of a Gentile Christian friend. That's how I got saved, through Gentile Christian friends and others that knew the Lord, older believers that I didn't know, praying. So, the fact is we have the Holy Spirit at work, and we have a massive army. As for funding, boy, I wish I could get some of these multi-millions of dollars. We'd use it to reach Jewish people. We come back, a long-awaited report from Jerusalem that you don't want to miss. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming your way live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where a few hours from now I'll be debating a conservative rabbi, Rabbi Gold, about Jesus, Messiah or not. Last year in Florida, debated Rabbi Silver. Tonight, Rabbi Gold. I guess we passed on Rabbi Bronze. But really pray seriously that God would be glorified, that Yeshua would be lifted up, that hearts and minds would be opened. We just got a caller asking that we pray for an unsaved Jewish brother named Gene. So let's just do that now. Father, we pray for those Jewish people that will be attending the debate, the dialogue tonight, that their hearts and minds would be open to your truth, that veils would be lifted, and that Yeshua would be revealed. And for this man named Gene, Lord, that you would dramatically work in his life, turn his heart, and change him. Okay, before I get into explaining why there's such extreme hostility in the Jewish community towards groups like Jews for Jesus, towards people like me that are known for reaching out to the Jewish people as a Jew, the accusation that we are soul Nazis. Before I explain that, a couple weeks back, there was a wonderful meeting in Israel called Elav, which means to him, a youth gathering in Israel, and some of our spiritual kids laboring in the land for years now. We're on the front lines involved with that in worship and ministry, and we weren't able to connect last week to get a report, but I'm pleased that today, live from Jerusalem and staying up to be on the air with us, Kobe Ferguson, thanks for calling in, Kobe.
Hey, my pleasure. Great to talk with you.
Tell us about this Elav gathering. How many Jewish young people, believers, came together? And then I want to talk to you about some of the amazing reconciliation things that took place.
Well, this year we had about 800 in attendance. So we gather about 700 Israelis, maybe a few internationals, and maybe around 100 Arabs actually came, some Israeli Arabs, but a lot of them were actually from West Bank and Palestinian-controlled areas, and that is a new thing altogether.
Wow. All right, now before we focus on that, which is just an extraordinary testimony, I mean, mind-boggling, it's the power of the gospel. Tell me about the significance of gathering this many young people who are believers in Yeshua together in Israel.
Well, just a brief note from my personal kind of reflections. When I came here back in 99, we went to a youth conference, we helped put it together on the Sea of Galilee, and about 120 youth came together, and we thought, wow, this is, you know, an amazing number. This, you know, and everybody was talking about how large that was,
right,
youth gathering, and now we're talking, I mean, you know, just, you know, nearly 10 times the growth, and there was, it was actually kind of even a down season because of the summer, and it was difficult for a lot of youth to come, so it's an amazing thing, just to, and very significant, because there could be a lot of these youths from all over, from all the way from Kiryat Shmona, which is a very northern tip, down to Eilat and everywhere in between. A lot of these youth could be the only believer in their town, some in their own, in their city, maybe the only young believer in their school. But when they meet together, they realize, hey, we're not alone. And just, and
yes,
these conferences, this is a 3-day national gathering of worship and prayer and pouring into the youth and counseling and you name it. but mostly, like you said, alav, which means unto him, unto the Lord. So we're gathering together really just to worship and see God do something.
Now, Colby, your wife, Shani, was born in Israel, grew up as a child there. And is it true that she and her brother were about the only Jewish young people that were believers that they knew for a while?
Yeah, they laugh about it, how they were the Israeli youth group. You know, 15, 20 years ago, they would look at each other and say, what does the Israeli youth group want to do today?
You know? Amazing. So you know, it's really important for our listeners to understand, sure, there's a massive amount of work to be done, but a lot has happened very recently and dramatically, even in the last 10 years. So one last thing about the makeup of the kids that were there. Do you know roughly, or give me a wild guesstimate, how many of them were native-born Israelis?
I'd probably say maybe 600 out of that, maybe five, just to...
Seriously?
Accurate. Yeah, it was...
That's incredible.
You know, predominantly when, you know, all the activities, the registration, and we had to have so much native-born help and volunteers this year because of so many people that couldn't speak English.
And tremendous.
So much of the communication this year, videos that were done prior to the conference, and, you know, the emails that were sent out, just, you know, informational. We had to have everything translated into Hebrew, some English for the speakers that, you know, don't really, internationals too that are coming. But this year we shifted into most of the speakers, most of all the ministry was done in Hebrew.
Now, tell me about those that came from so-called occupied territories, Arab believers in Jesus, where you would assume there's going to be hostility, even from Ramallah. First, how did this happen that they came, and then what happened when they were there?
Well, some of that is slightly clandestine, so we're not going to get into all the details.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
for a number of reasons, but really just in short, a lot of relationships that have been built over the years with these youth and different congregations and different churches in these areas. And, you know, after a period of time, these relationships have been built. And so we've communicated to a lot of the leaders and through really some of the hosts and the great directors that put on this conference just said, hey, let's reach out. Let's just believe, because it's usually not allowed. And so they reached out, and it almost didn't happen. The Palestinian authorities denied the entrance to almost all of these youth and would not answer the phone. The offices suddenly were closed that needed to be addressed, and we had to send some people to go, you know, bang on the doors, and finally somebody opened up, and a lot of prayer went up to even get it. So only about half of them came that wanted to come.
Mm.
But the ones that came, it was quite a shock. A lot of these young Palestinians had never been outside. It's very sad, but had never been outside of their little villages, their areas. Tel Aviv to them was, you know, the most massive thing they had ever seen in their lives.
Wow.
You know, a lot of them, when they arrived at their hotels and their accommodations, that we need to take a nap. We've never been around anything like this.
Amazing. Hey, listen, we've got 1 minute before the break. Tell me what happened with some of the reconciliation.
Well, this was an unexpected thing, which just shows God's hand on it, even all the more. It was one of these power teams called Team Extreme. They travel all over the world and display acts of human, almost superhuman strength. You've heard of these guys. And
sure.
One of the brothers there, Saeed Awad, was originally from Ramallah and has years ago moved to America, and long story short, radically come to faith to the Lord.
All right, hey, Colby, hang on. Stay with us a couple more minutes. We'll finish this on the other side of the break. Thanks so much. You got to hear the story, friends. Stay right here. God of light, hear our cry. Welcome back to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown coming away live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And they'll be debating just, 3.5 hours from now, conservative Jewish rabbi, Rabbi Gold. I believe we'll have a very civil dialogue about the question, Jesus, Messiah or not. They're expecting 400, 500, 600 in attendance tonight, many of whom will be Jews who do not believe in Yeshua. Many have never heard the gospel. So really pray that God would work, that souls would be drawn to him, that truth would triumph. Okay, still on the line with us, Kobe Ferguson from Jerusalem. Just tell folks your website so they can get more information, not just on the Elav event, the youth event that we're talking about that took place in Israel, but also about the work that, you and your wife Shani are doing there.
It's www.yeshuaisrael.com.
Just spell it for everybody.
YeshuaIsrael.com. So just
great,
and we'll like one word, Yeshua Israel.
We'll have a link on the Line of Fire website as well. Okay, so Team Extreme is over there. One of them is originally from Lebanon.
Originally from Ramallah.
And let our listeners understand exactly where Ramallah is or why
Ramallah
so significant.
Ramallah is, I think, one of the more famous residence sales from Ramallah is would be the former Yasser Arafat,
uh-huh.
who was originally from Egypt, but that's another story. But yes, Ramallah is one of the head municipalities for the West Bank Palestinian-controlled areas. So it's pretty significant. This guy actually grew up with constant clashes with the IDF, with the Israeli military. His best friend as a child was killed by an Israeli soldier in a violent clash. So this guy uh-huh. grew up with an extreme hatred and a blood vengeance on his heart towards Israeli soldiers in particular, not just Israelis in general. But at some point, he moved to America and was visiting an Arabic-speaking congregation in, of all places, Birmingham, Alabama.
You got to be kidding.
And the pastor begins to preach about loving the Jew, loving the former enemy, the Jew, because they're God's people. And in the middle of service, this guy gets up and tells his friend, we need to blow this church up because they're a bunch of Zionists. And the guy...
Incredible.
And so they both leave. But at some point, this guy began to seek the Lord. And a long story short, the Lord began to show him, you must forgive the Jews. And so he did, and radically came to faith in the Lord. And so at this conference, he's giving this testimony. And we really didn't expect them to even be there. They were on the beach. They had been traveling through Israel doing what they do in different congregations. And we decided, hey, this is be a great opportunity. We'll give them a slot at the very, very end. And, wow, it was really from the Lord because there were all these Israelis together and Israeli soldiers. Quite a few, actually, were in attendance. And when I mean Israeli soldiers, I don't mean they weren't in their civilian garb. They were dressed to the hilt with their M16s strapped mm-hmm. to their shoulder and other weapons, men and women carrying weapons, Israeli soldiers, and a lot of these Palestinians who had come. And so when he gives this testimony, you could just feel it in the air. And he calls in Hebrew the Israeli soldiers that were in this certain area to come towards the stage after he blew something up. I think he chopped through about 8 pieces of solid concrete.
Uh-huh.
He calls them forward, and he says, this is what the Lord did to my hatred. He broke it through, and,
wow.
and he jumps off the stage and holds these, you know, he dwarfs them, of course, holds these Israeli soldiers as they begin to cry and laugh together. And it just broke something. This was at the beginning, at the very front of the conference. It's from that moment, there was just, I just get choked up thinking about it, just such a powerful testimony of the unity that is going to come in greater measures, but you know, that can only happen through Yeshua. So well, these Palestinians that are there, many of the youths just began to love on the Israeli soldiers. and began to see that this can only happen in that kind of atmosphere. You know,
yes.
We've seen it a couple times and heard about it recently, even with the son of Hamas over, they call him the Green Prince, of course, it's been all
yes.
over the news. You know, these kind of things are going to start happening more and more. And it's only happening with those who love Yeshua, who love Jesus. Arabs come to faith in Jesus and they begin to realize not only is Jesus Messiah, is Jewish Messiah, and his people, well, they have to love them. And God is pouring out a love. Amazing.
Now, how did the that's an extraordinarily sacred scene you just described, Kobe. I'm picturing it in my mind, and it's overwhelming just to think about. What did the Israelis do in terms of reaching out to these Palestinian kids?
Well, pretty much they were given the seat of honor, always up front. Such a tender heartedness that I haven't seen. You know, a lot of it is just because they're for security reasons. There's a segregation, and I don't mean segregation in terms of discrimination or bigotry. I'm sure that occurs on both sides, but with these believers, it's just they don't really have a chance to be around each other. So this was a very powerful time and an immense God-ordained opportunity for the two sides to come together. And really one of the bigger things was they had their own Arabic worship. So teams that performed worship in Arabic and the sounds that go along with that and the beautiful rhythms. And the Israelis really giving honor to that and just showing, hey, we'll worship to this along with the worship music that we love. So a real preference, but also just a real brotherhood. Just hanging out as youth, hang out and talk and get on their little handheld smartphones and play games together. And so really just a camaraderie.
You know, Kobe, I've been in meetings in Israel that had together in one meeting Russian Jews, Ethiopian Jews, native-born Israeli Jews, and Arab Christians, and then people from other nations, all worshiping together as one. I mean, I've seen it with a multitude of nations, but just the sharing the platform and ministering together, committed Arab Christians and native-born Israelis, serving the Lord one heart. I don't really see how something on that deep a level, not just a superficial let's get along, but that deep a level of supernatural love and honor and esteem can happen outside of the gospel. But through the gospel, think of this, and we got to break, so I'll make this quick. For everybody listening, when Jesus says that the world will know that we are disciples by our love one for another, we're dealing with, you know, splits between Baptist sects and Pentecostal sects, and we can't even get along with the church down the block. This is the kind of thing, Kobe. This is the kind of thing that makes the world know that God sent Jesus, Yeshua, to be the Messiah of the world. Hey, thanks so much for joining us, folks. Go to YeshuaIsrael.com. God bless you, man. Thanks.
Love you.
All right, if you just tuned in, by all means, go to the website later today, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire. You need to hear the testimony that we have just been listening to from Israel. It'll bless you, stir your heart, encourage you. Hey, friends, if there can be reconciliation, mutual love and honor between Palestinian Christians and Israeli Messianic Jews, there can be reconciliation, honor, esteem, unity among any two groups in the world. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm coming your way live from right outside of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where I'll be debating a conservative rabbi today, Rabbi Gold. I started the show talking about the issue of Jews for Jesus and a Facebook site that someone alerted me to called Stop the Jews for Jesus. It's based in Israel, if you read on. It's written in English and then in Hebrew quite passionately. Beneath that, the gentleman that started this is not a religious Jew. He's just not religious. At the bottom, I'm reading the Hebrew, not religious, not conservative, not exactly secular for himself. Anyway, on the bottom it says, keep inviting people over, all the way down at the bottom. We need to stop these soul Nazis. Jews for Jesus, soul Nazis. One of the people that's listed as a friend there, look at how he describes himself. I am a Gentile who opposes Jews for Jesus and embraces religious tolerance. This is the thing that always amazes me. Oh, okay. You oppose Jews for Jesus and you embrace religious tolerance. So you're not tolerant of Jews who believe in Jesus. Huh? You're only tolerant of what you think is okay. Anyway, so much for religious tolerance. We run into that double standard all the time, of course. But it's important to understand that in many, many Jewish homes around the world, Jesus is not a positive name or word. In fact, in many homes, it's profanity. To say his name is actually profanity. And in traditional Jewish homes around the world, Jesus, for centuries, has often been considered an enemy of Israel, one who brought mass destruction on Jewish people. The Holocaust is associated with Christianity. The Crusades, the Inquisition is quite rightly associated with Christianity, the Holocaust in a more secondary way because the Nazis were anti-Christian as well. But the Holocaust was birthed on soil that had been watered with deep anti-Semitism in the name of Christianity for centuries. The demonizing of the Jew throughout church history in the name of Christian polemics, sometimes by the greatest leaders of the day, this has all made Jews think that Jesus was the founder of a hostile religion, and whether he intended it or not, certainly his followers have been hostile to the Jewish people, are responsible for mass murder of Jews, are responsible for giving Jews the choice of baptism or death in the Middle Ages, are responsible for Jew hatred today. This is just the lens through which Jewish people see the gospel and Christianity. Now, most American Jews don't have that deep an antipathy, that deep a negative reaction towards the gospel because they're more separated from the culture and the history. But those that know their history better, those that are more traditional, still live with this reality. So when a Jew begins to follow Jesus, this is, wait a second. Our ancestors died rather than embrace this apostate religion. Our ancestors died rather than be disloyal to God, and you, with no pressure or compunction, you freely choose to follow him? We are called apostates. We are insulted with very ugly terms, but I understand why. It's perceived that we are joining a hostile, anti-Jewish religion. It's perceived that we are making a man into a god without understanding of the incarnation. It's perceived that we are following in the footsteps of the Crusaders. In fact, some of the finest Christian organizations in the world will use the term Crusaders or Campus Crusade or those types of things. I've got dear friends that preach Crusades around the world. It's a fine, good word to them, but for many of us, it's not a fine, good word because of the memories of the Crusades. That's what comes to mind in a Jewish heart and life. So the idea of, quote, being soul Nazis, what they mean is that we are trying to destroy the souls of Jewish people, and that's what they say through their blindness. So do we react with anger? Oh, dare they say, no, of course not. You react with sadness. You react recognizing that much of the professing church through the centuries has done a terrible job of representing Jesus to the Jewish people, and that most Jews have never heard the real gospel or been confronted with the real Yeshua. Therefore, with great compassion, long-suffering, gentleness, patience, we reach out with the truth, knowing that it's the truth that will not destroy a Jewish soul, but will liberate, transform, and save a Jewish soul. We'll be back. Thanks so much for being with us today on the Line of Fire. Hey, even though I can't talk to most of you face-to-face, I am encouraged by the solidarity. I feel the prayer support. I feel the support of love and folks saying, I'm with you. And when I go and do a debate or have a public dialogue like tonight, I never do it just thinking this is what I'm doing. First and foremost, I'm doing it as a child of the Lord and wanting to be a faithful ambassador to him and give him the glory that's due his name by presenting truth with excellence and with love. And of course, I'm doing it as an extension of Jewish believers everywhere as I stand up for Yeshua and proclaim the gospel to my Jewish people, our Jewish people. And I'm doing it as an extension of my home community, Fire, with a sense of solidarity and oneness. And I am doing it with a sense of solidarity with you, the listening audience. So thanks for the many comments you send our way, for the words of encouragement, and for the prayer support. And whatever happens tonight as you stand with us and pray, you get to be part of it. I mean that. No hype. I'm real serious. So I put forth a question at the beginning of the show. Is it right for a Jew who believes in Jesus to say that they're still Jewish? Why not just say, I became a Christian, I converted to Christianity? And then some of the Jewish community wouldn't be so upset with us because they claim we're being deceptive and the like. Let me tell you why I don't say I converted to Christianity, or why I'll tell people tonight you need to convert to Christianity. One of my Israeli friends, actually the father-in-law of Kobe that was just on the air with us, was once asked, how does it feel to be a converted Jew? He said, I don't know, because it's not a sin to be a Jew. I'm a converted sinner. Ah, in other words, I'm not a converted male. I'm a male who believes in Jesus. I'm not a converted Jew. I'm a Jew who believes in Jesus, Yeshua. You say, no, you used to be Jewish. Well, no, I used to be a mild practitioner of Judaism. I wasn't very religious, but I was a mild practitioner of Judaism and then got into my drug days as a teenager. No, I'm not a practitioner of traditional Judaism, but as a Jew, I am following the Jewish Messiah. As a Jew, I am recovering the Jewish roots that God had intended for our ancestors. As a Jew, I'm living in the fulfillment of the covenantal promises that God gave to my Jewish people. In fact, I dare say that if I had lived long enough, I'd outlived my drug craziness without getting saved, that I would have been totally assimilated. Being Jewish was not an important thing in my life. Coming to faith in Jesus, Yeshua, has made Jewish identity much more important to me, has caused me to learn Hebrew and to study Jewish literature, and to stand much more passionately for my people, Israel. And I know many Jews that were assimilated or on their way to assimilation, and getting saved has been the very thing that's awakened Jewish consciousness within them and has reminded them of the covenantal heritage that we have in Yeshua, and has even brought to life for them the biblical calendar. So far from saying, well, you know, you used to be Jewish and you're not, you converted to Christianity, no. To the contrary, our real Jewish identity has been massively strengthened, even though my primary identity is not being Jewish, it's not being male, it's being in Jesus, in Yeshua. That's my primary first identity, which is stronger and more important than everything else. But there's no conflict between being male and following Yeshua for me, and there's no conflict between being Jewish and following Yeshua. In fact, as a Jew, I'm overwhelmed with the reality that this is what God intended for us, and this is how we get to be a light to the nations. I've got a bunch of things I want to talk to you about tomorrow. God willing, we'll be back in our studios in Charlotte. We are right outside of Charlotte. We'll be giving you an update on the debate, but I got a bunch of things I want to talk to you about, some reflections on some of the earlier shows in the week, and some alerts that will really alert you. So stay with us. Be back tomorrow. And please do pray for a great proclamation of the gospel and Jewish and Gentile souls coming to Yeshua tonight. Thank you.